Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And you are listening to episode 57. And we have the real rad person named Megan Gonzalez. You may know her by May May & Co. It's sort of her identity, little studio she has. She has a very nice Instagram. I suggest you go look at it.
It's pretty. An absolutely fetching Instagram.
Fetching, nice. You're making that happen. I think we were talking with Megan about niche, which is like a really interesting topic for her. She's kind of in the wedding industry a little bit, and she had some cool perspective on that topic and on her work.
Absolutely. It was a really enlightening conversation about and through the lens of her own story, because she is a print and papery company, but she's kind of gone all over the place in terms of breadth and then focus in terms of what she actually, makes and what her wheelhouse, so to speak, is. And the conversation about, is niche good? Is niche too limiting? Should everyone have a niche? Should no one have a niche? Et cetera, et cetera. It just went to a lot of
interesting. Am I a niche? Are you a niche? What's a niche? I want to thank the good homies from Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. I really, really love Squarespace. I have built probably 30 websites on Squarespace. I recommend it to most people. There are like very few cases.
Most humans you just come across in your life. You just say, you shout out on the street.
I know. I should be getting paid a little bit more. I'm really giving it all away there. Squarespace helps you build beautiful websites. It makes it easy. It's got this kind of WYSIWYG platform. What you see is what you get. It's honestly one of the simplest content management tools.
Yeah,
and it's just so smart. And it scales. It's like, I like start laughing when I talk about designing other websites, like, and laying out every single page. It's like you do it and it's there, and now it scales, it's responsive, it's already done. It's like, wow. And all the templates are really, really beautiful. Okay, I fucking love Squarespace.
If you're building a website, just use it.
That's just go
just
do it.
Use it.
And do us and yourself a favor and use our offer code. You get 10% off. Makes it pretty cheap. I don't know. I think that might knock it down to like $8 a month, something like that. Yeah. Don't quote me on it. But and our offer code is 10,000 hours. That's 10000HOURS.
Nailed it.
Did I get it? So it's it's 1140?
11 and 40. Yes.
And then an H, and then not another zero. It's an O.
It's an O.
It's an O. H. Don't mix that up. And then a U, and then an R, and then an S. And then you're
done. You're done then. Thank you so much, Squarespace, for being a great product and for being a great sponsor. Thank you so much, Megan Gonzalez, for joining us in studio and for being lovely and charming and having a great conversation with us. And thank you, listeners, as always. Enjoy episode 57, Niche.
No, it's a niche. Test.
Sweet.
Test squad. Test. Dude.
Can we get a pronunciation on the last name?
Gonzalez.
Dude, come on. Did you really?
I'm still kind of learning how to say it too. It's okay.
It's tradition. It's tradition, Grant.
Vince, what are you putting your time into? What are you working on? Also, for context, you're looking very dashing.
Hey, thanks, Grant.
You always look good, but I mean, it seems like you took some extra effort today.
Dressed up a little bit today. Had to take the jacket off, though, because it's actually warm, it's here, warm in here in Minneapolis. Yeah. Yes, thank
I should turn goodness. The AC on, but...
At long last.
Yeah.
I had a presentation bright and early this morning at 7 o'clock with our clients.
What? You had a 7 a.m. presentation with a client?
Yep.
That's absolutely. Crazy. In the same time zone?
Yeah, in Minneapolis, and we had to go out to the suburbs, so I had to get
what?
Up bright and early.
Who does that? That's just ludicrous.
But it went really well. It's with a local financier firm, and it was really good. They're a great client, and it was a great presentation. Beyond that, I'm working with a close friend of mine, Mark Ruff, who actually, strangely, lives in the same building that we're in right now on a little bit of a personal project of ours. So that's been keeping me busy as well.
Grant. More info to come?
More info to probably come, yes.
Okay.
Probably. Nice. We're not sure what's going to happen with it. Yeah, it's infancy, so you know, a lot to be determined. Grant, first time we're doing this since you took a bit of a trip.
Jeez, man. Yeah, wow. We haven't podcasted. This is probably like the biggest hiatus we've taken, at least in 2015.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, you know, it's fun because we were both kind of on the road. And where were you?
You were in Utah. Let's see. I was in the desert, and then I was in, well, I was in the desert most of the time, but flew out to Denver, hit the road for a few days, was camping, and then went out to Coachella Music Festival. That's unbelievable. So
I saw some of the pictures. Oh my God, dude.
Man, what a... That was so worth it. It was so good. I swear I did not believe the hype. I was not a hater, but I was kind of like a...
You're a skeptic, right?
Like, yeah, man. I don't know. But then I got out there, and I seriously had the time of my life. Saw some of the best music I've ever seen. So much of it. And everybody was awesome. I met some friends that are probably lifelong friends. Just real good homies. And then camped on the way back and flew back from Denver. And dude, I'm so excited to see my photos. Got like, I probably shot 15 or so rolls out there.
Oh my God. Did you get them back?
No, tomorrow, I think.
Fingers crossed.
Yeehaw. Yeah, so that was good. And you were in Salt Lake City, yeah?
Yeah, I was visiting a good friend of mine, Carl Schaefer.
Carl Schaefer.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But yeah, I guess that's been keeping you busy, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, dude, this is probably the the most fun... Since I got back, it's all fun stuff I'm working on. Like, I got a music video that should come out. I just picture locked it today, going to color in the next couple of days, and sound. And then giving a TEDx next weekend, which should be pretty dope, but stuff worth doing. And I had one more thing that was, like, super tight. Oh, Green Room. Green Room issue 4 is going to print, like, tomorrow. So that's pretty cool.
When do you think it'll hit the shelves?
The shelves, the digital shelves, too. I don't know, mid-May-ish.
Cool. I'll be looking at my email box anxiously.
Vince is a subscriber.
I'm a proud and happy subscriber.
I think probably our first question to our guest is going to be, is she a subscriber? And if not, why? And and unless you're going to put in your payment information and become one, then you should leave.
This episode's over now.
That's actually like our main marketing tool for Green Room is we just have podcast guests.
And we hold them hostage.
Sign up. Yeah. Grant. And man, it's funny that you were saying that the Mark Ruff, so close to Olo, right? But he's in the same building because this particular homie was in the same building for a little bit, which is how I met her, which is super funny because I realized at a certain point, I was like, oh, I've been following her work. And then I was like, where do I recognize
this
from?
But she's also a real person?
Yeah, I know. It's so weird, dude. That's the beauty and the surreality of the internet. The virtual reality of it. Anyway, let's not go down that rabbit hole. Not quite yet. Welcome to the show. She is the owner and founder of Maymay. Maymay Co.
You guys, Maymay and Co.
Maymay and Co. A real cool company. I'm gonna let you pitch it. I mean, well, maybe I'll. My impression of it is creative company that makes stuff.
Yes, I love that.
Pretty broad.
Yeah, super broad, but also accurate.
And Megan Gonzalez, I should say her name too.
Yes, Megan Gonzalez, thank you so much for joining us in studio.
Yeah,
hey.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, no, thank you for coming. And let me do the distinct honor of asking you, what have you been putting your time into recently?
Ooh, yes, I have been exploring some new opportunities, working with people who are more like me. So designers, stationers, and kind of coming alongside them and helping them with creative direction, giving them insight, connecting them to people.
Say stationers?
Stationers. People who make stationery.
Wow.
Like designer.
I learned a word today.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
I feel like it sounds fancier. Kind of makes you sound a little more established.
Like a sommelier or something.
Exactly.
Like,
I don't even know what that means, but.
What? Really? Okay.
Yeah, what's
like
that?
Like a wine expert? Like, expert, yeah.
Okay.
And then a Cicerone is a beer. Hey.
Oh.
Nice. But that's cool. Stationer.
Right, yeah. Cool. So I've been kind of like figuring out how to help a lot of people that I know and who like Maymay, who are not necessarily consumers of the stationery that I make, but who kind of want me to help them and teach them what I've been learning along the way. So that's been really fun. I'm working specifically with a company called Violet Weddings right now, and they're making some cool stationery. And yeah, so I've been working on that, helping them style photos, helping them with social strategies.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you also moved into a new space recently, right?
Yes.
A new workspace.
So I moved out of the space we're currently
in. Which I'm about to move out of.
Yeah.
So
So come on over.
I know. I'm like, come on over. You're the trendsetter. I'm just following your footsteps.
Yeah. So the space is called Restore, and it's a collaborative space in the Warehouse District here in Minneapolis. And there's lots of other visual creatives, some larger companies and some individuals, and the energy there is really cool. People just, you know, trying new things and encouraging each other, and you just have a lot of people to bounce ideas around.
Very positive. Yeah. I went to an event there. I was telling you before we got started. Really cool. Also, I will say, like, especially lately, when I'm dealing with print stuff, with Green Room and, like, dealing with printers, and have you ever been over to the lab?
Oh, yeah. I teach classes with lab.
Oh, dope. Yeah. Okay. Like, shout out to the, is it Eric?
Oh, wait. We're talking about
I'm talking about
things.
The lab. You're talking about the...
I'm talking about Lab Minneapolis. Thing.
Yes. Ooh, I forget. I've looked at that. I've seen that. But anyway, it's just like...
We should know it's both of those.
We should. But just talking to like, printers and people who do that stuff, it's like, wow, this is, like, an art within the art. It's unbelievable.
Well, and what's cool, too, is they take something somebody else has cared a lot about and poured a lot of time into. Yeah. And then, you know, they're kind of responsible with it. They don't even know the story of how it got made, but, you know, they kind of have their own story they put into it as they print it in whatever method.
Yeah. I've heard printers described to in my industry by designers as the doctors that deliver the baby.
And then what are the designers? They impregnate the...
Yeah, the designers... The designers create the
sexist?
Baby, right?
Is that... Or no. They fertilize, they grow it. I don't... Doesn't
yeah,
need
it's
just
gender agnostic. But, the printer is responsible for getting the idea out into the world correctly.
Yeah,
well, and it's often the hardest part of a lot of projects,
definitely.
Right?
Well, and when I started, the thing I really struggled with was you would see that final printed project... And you feel really dissatisfied with it because it looks super different than how it does on your screen.
Then
I think after time you get used to it because even if the print quality is awesome, it's just different than what you've been looking at.
Yeah.
So you just have to like get used to that feeling of seeing something you know, was your baby and you poured all this time into and crafted it. And it just looks a little different every time. And you have to just be cool with that.
When I saw the ultrasound, it was a girl. What is that?
So we've kind of like skirted around it, but do you want to just like...
Let's.
Address directly what May May & Co. is and does?
Yes. Yeah. So I'll tell you a little history.
Cool,
and then
please.
Kind of where we're at now. I started what was called May May Papery when I was in college in 2008.
Cool.
And it started as a wedding stationery company and has since evolved.
You were out west, right?
Yes, I was in the Los Angeles area.
Cool.
Yep. And it kind of, because people in the wedding industry saw my work, they wanted to hire me to do branding and kind of help them with collateral and things like that. So I kind of delved into that and, you know, dipped my foot in, took it back out, put it back in.
Showed it all about.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it was impregnated. And then,
Yeah. So I've been working with other creatives too, which is something I really like. And we recently changed the name to May May & Co. to kind of represent all the collaborations and not be so exclusive just to paper, even though it's definitely our foundation and the thing I would say I know best and am most passionate about.
That's fun.
But I think May May has also become kind of this base of how do you get really scrappy and start a creative business. And I think the story of how it was created and kind of the evolution of projects I work on is kind of a big part and draw of why people like it. So right now, kind of like I was sharing with you guys earlier, I'm kind of figuring out like, where are we? What are we? And I would say we're kind of going back actually and circling back around the wedding stationery and doing a lot of like luxury weddings.
Cool.
And then like I just said, I'm helping other people who do similar things to me kind of hone in on their craft and
this is pertinent to the topic, and it is, I think, something we talk about a lot, the nature of like creative entrepreneurship and navigating those waters which are ever changing. But I think so today we're talking about niche. Let's just not even like
all right.
Pronounce it how you
once
will.
Once and for all, for our listeners, we are going to pronounce it different ways on the show because that's just how it's going to
work. And grammatically, you're fine either way.
Absolutely. They're both acceptable.
You do you. And hey, I might even jump back and forth between pronunciations.
Great.
The reason I proposed this topic was because, you know, I looked at your work and I see this, like, the wedding stuff and the paper stuff. And it's like, oh, there's, like, a niche there or a niche there. And it's like, that's interesting. And it's really interesting to me in general, like, as as a entrepreneur and working in multiple creative fields, seeing people like commit to, I mean, really it's about commitment even. It's like, you know, because you start to get work in this area and like, do you keep going?
Right.
Do you, and I mean, I'm maybe at fault for like bailing out like over and over and jumping in between them, which can be very confusing. So, there's all sorts of things. So you started talking about how you got into that and how that's evolved. And so 2008 you started, yeah?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you've been like, would you, what percentage would you say of your business is like weddings?
Yeah. That's kind of tricky.
And I'm sure
say,
that's evolved.
Yeah, exactly. Like before last year. So in 2014, we made a pretty big switch and did a lot of branding for other really cool creative
businesses. So what prompted that? Were you like...
I think demand. And then, you know, what's interesting about niche is whatever you put out there, people can come to you for something else and kind of like redirect your niche. And you have to decide, am I in control of this or is the demand in control of it?
Yeah.
And I kind of let the demand control what I did this last year. And, you know, we made a lot of really cool things. But then I decided I felt really pulled in a lot of directions.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the core of why we started was wedding stationery. So I'm kind of, I'm trying to redirect the focus over there. But maybe it doesn't even mean like making wedding stationery. Maybe it just means anything wedding stationery. So we could still work with other businesses that are in wedding stationery.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's really interesting. And it brings up a couple of questions for me. First being, I'm reminded sort of a conversation we had with Katie Featherston, who is an actress who's famous initially.
Finding Your Voice, right?
Yeah, exactly. For, I think it was Breaking In, Breaking Out.
Oh, Breaking In, yeah.
So she was famous for her role in one very specific movie, being Paranormal Activity.
And so
we talked to her about the difference of being typecast and the difference between steering into your expertise and then stretching your comfort zone. So I'm curious, where do you fall on the line of, and you kind of touched on it just a second ago, being passive and making sure you don't miss out on an opportunity that the market is asking for versus making sure your brand is solidified and acknowledgeable and shareable and has an expertise?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something I'm really digging into and trying to figure out right now.
Yeah.
And I think what you have to do is maybe set up some like broader parameters. And then anytime you're approached with the project, you go through those parameters and you say, does it hit this, this, and this?
We
if
don't
not,
with,
I have to say no.
We don't work with Nazis. We don't work with... Sorry.
Well, hopefully that's like a unspoken.
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
No, but that is a weird thing. That's like, I mean, it's like you have the path of... Well, you have like the market and you have, in general, as an entrepreneur, sometimes it's just like, what will get me over the hurdle this month?
Oh my gosh, yes.
I need to lean into that for a second. And maybe I don't need to make money on the project that is maybe the thing I think represents me.
Right.
That's maybe more of a passion thing. But here's where it gets more complicated. And I think I applaud you for it. And I also am like, whoa. But like, I've talked about this many times before. We had a studio out in St. Paul and I'd started kind of like ramping stuff up.
Yeah.
I'd started that when I was in school and I had like, I was contracting people and I was starting to like manage people and I was like in that role and I got freaked out, not like, not because of leadership, but just like, oh damn, I'm getting further and further away from the work and I'm not learning as much about that, which is what I want to be learning about. And it's just like really freaked me out.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, oh, I took a step back. I was like, I'm just kind of go solo and just partner up with people.
Yeah.
Which,
how did you feel after you did that?
Huzzah!
Yeah. So much better. I was like friends with you and still talking to you through that stuff kind of while it happened, and the mood change was pretty significant.
Yeah. I remember you were telling me, you're like, oh wow, this is the happiest I've seen you in like months, years, whatever.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what's really tricky is you tell yourself that lie that there's not going to be enough work in what you want to do. And so you have to keep jumping on. And I think that there's a time for that, definitely. You know, you don't want to go into it and say, I'm only going to take all the projects I want and I'm going to be a smashing success from, you know, starting at nothing out of school. That's super unrealistic.
Yeah.
But I think it's about putting parameters like, okay, I really got to dig in for 2 years and I'll be willing to take any kind of project that hits these broader parameters. Year after that, I'm going to tighten my parameters. Year after that, tighten. And then it's like, if you are viable and you're doing good work that's unique that people want to come to you for, then you can say, this is what I want to do. And then there's the sad reality, if maybe you're not good enough or there's not demand for that, you do have to take on all these other things. So you have to just be really realistic about where you stand. But I think you can have kind of like grades where it's like, okay, for this period of time, I'll take on anything. Mm-hmm. Like one time I had never made a website, and I made quote unquote a website for this like video game company. I had absolutely zero idea what I was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like you just take on these projects. You're like, I have no idea, but right. I'll just figure it out because I need some money.
Yeah, it's a paycheck and or it's experience. Like a learning opportunity. It's
yeah.
Like, I'm scared of this. I'm going to lean into
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I would say at the start, I wasn't afraid to do anything. And I think that's like a good mentality to have. But I wish I had put some parameters on it, because some of the mistakes and some of the big learning lessons, I think, weren't necessary for me to like keep moving in what I wanted to do, versus some things where you're like, yeah, I had to make that mistake because that's going to help me grow and help me do better work. But some of the things, if I had made some rules for myself, mm-hmm. I could have avoided.
So I'm going to actually, maybe if you could ask to share some of those rules in a second,
yeah.
But coming from an agency's perspective, I run into this with a client literally every single time. Every single client has this problem. Basically, it's the dichotomy of wanting to be expert and honed into a specific demographic, but not lose the broader demographic,
yeah.
right?
Right.
So when you say, for instance, I'm just going to be putting words in your mouth for a second, so I apologize in advance.
Go for it.
But
whoa.
I want to be very good at wedding stationery and the things that surround that. But then you don't want to alienate other...
Right.
You know, realms of business.
Right.
What kind of things do you set up to protect yourself from either straying too far or from losing too many opportunities?
Oh, that's good. I think what I'm doing right now is Anna, who works with me, I told her these are the kinds of projects we're going to do. And when she fields those initial inquiries, you know, she tells those people what I told her
mm-hmm.
versus if it's me, I get very emotional, like, oh, that sounds exciting. Cool.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
Yep.
And, honestly, I can't say no.
Yeah.
And so I think everybody is different, but for me, it's having the accountability of somebody else being that like initial filter.
Mm.
And I think over time, I'm trying to like train myself, but just to have confidence. Exactly what I said about that lie that you're not going to have enough work doing what you want to do. I tell that lie to myself all the time. And then, you know, I actually heard this example yesterday from my pastor. He was talking about you have this vase
mm-hmm.
and you can have four big stones in it. And then you have all these pebbles. But if you put all the pebbles in first, like the stones might not fit, versus if you put the big stones in, all the little pebbles can like go around it and it all fits. And I was like, boom, that's exactly what I do, is I concentrate on my little pebbles all day that are like shooting me off in all these directions, versus if I could really identify what are like my four or three or two, whatever, main things I want to work on, and I focus on that. And then when there's some room, I take on those little extra things.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've been analyzing my calendar lately, and you look at what you did do, and you're like, that wasn't for money, that wasn't for money, that wasn't for money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they're all like cool collaborative things and what have you, but I think those should come second to like making work, pursuing, you know, marketing yourself, blah, 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 blah.
Because if you aren't doing that and your thing that you're doing ceases to exist because you ran out of money, then you can't do those collaborative things anyway.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, so
making a head tilting.
Well, it's a tough balance. I mean, so I guess for me though, like in that circumstance, it's not exactly comparative. Well, it's comparative. It's not exactly parallel or related totally, but it's like, oh, I don't want to have to, like, if I can add a layer, and maybe that's like two people working with me, right?
Sure.
So there's a layer. And that gives me more flexibility in terms of, oh, now we have like more capacity.
Yeah.
Now I can filter this through here. Maybe I can make margin there and that allows me more freedom. But what I found, at least right now, at least in like the last couple years, I want the flexibility to just dive the fuck into like some of the stuff that I'm really passionate about.
Right.
And like not even have to think, like I'd rather just, you know, grind for 4 weeks on a project and then, oh, now I bought myself 2 months to just go kill the work that I want to be doing longer term.
Right.
And there is no like hard and fast answer, but I'd like, for me, it's like, oh yeah, I don't want to think about somebody else right there. Cause this is like, sometimes just really like, I used to be a little bit more on the fence about doing free work and doing this thing and asking people, but more and more, I'm like, oh wait, like this kind of, some of the work I want to be doing, it's like, yeah, I just want to go do that. I want to find people who are like down to do it.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I'm not trying to be like ambiguous, but I feel like, especially just like filmmaking stuff, it's been more of that.
Well, I think it's maybe you're about to like pour into a really specific niche and you're like more exploring, so, for sure, you know? Sure. And I think I totally get how you feel because when I was exploring and like taking on all these different jobs and all these different industries, it really helped me figure out what I liked. So I think you're in like that time where it's like, okay, I'm going to give myself this length, you know, this period of time that I'm just going to explore and try, and then you can refine from there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have so much time to figure out if you want to have a niche or if you want to have several.
But also, like, it's not even that. It's not even about time. It's like, no, I'm, like, doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like so much there's this idea that, like, oh, we'll figure it out, and then, you know? And we talk about this all the fucking time. We do. And this is even related frequently to the TED stuff I'm doing this weekend, which is, like,
oh, cool.
Stuff worth doing.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's not going to be, you know, oh, if I put in this time and this time and I do this and this and this, then...
Yeah.
There's always this if-then.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, now I'm doing it and I will continue doing it and I'm still doing it and I'll do it and then I'll die. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just mean it's not like a conditional thing that you will find happiness or find fulfillment in your work. And
yes,
I think they're just like degrees of it.
Absolutely. I think the difference
not to
being
get too hard,
you know, so. You can't just grind with the intention that the grind, despite any other things, any other factors, will pay off in and of itself. Because that's not necessarily true. You have to do it with purpose in mind. Yes. You have to have a plan. You have to have a vision.
Yep.
You have to have values that are important to you. And every time you grind on a project, it needs to be towards something more meaningful.
I agree. And I think if you go into something and you say, I don't know what this is going to be like. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the payoff is. But maybe you have like some questions that you're going to answer at the end of every project. And it helps you like figure out if
that's
you take
good.
That on
debrief,
again.
Debrief, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's actually really tough to debrief. And I think that's why right now I'm finally like, okay, what am I going to really like aim towards? Because when you're a creative, you're like, make. There's no like sit back and like look at what you're doing. And like, I take the so flow. Many notes. I have so much inspiration, but then I don't really like sit down and process it.
You never read the notes.
Yeah. Like, right. What's the point? Like what I was telling you about scrap paper.
Yeah.
Scrap paper for me is super dangerous because I write all these notes and then where does it go? I have no idea.
Into the aether, forever gone.
Yeah.
That's what I respect about like the business side of creative work. I was going to say creativity. Creative work. No, but...
You can pronounce that however you want to.
Yeah, thank you. The business side of it, though, forces your hand in terms of, like, constraints. And like, you okay, if you're doing this, you have to play a certain game.
Right.
And so I really like that about some elements of it. And debriefing is really tough. I feel like with... especially right away with the filmmaking stuff, that was something we were, like, trying to do because... when you're working with a new crew and it's like kind of like a family structure, it's like there's, and dude, filmmaking stuff is so much just communication.
Yeah.
It's like crazy. It's like we need to sit down and talk about what we didn't talk about or what we talked about, what happened.
But talk about
stupid,
what we
right?
talked
it feels
about.
Stupid.
Yeah.
But I mean, even maybe relative to niche, if you don't stop for a second and talk about like how you got to where you were just within the past, you know, X amount of time, then like, where's that going to send you next? And where's that going to send you next?
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I think if you set out this intention, anything that comes to me, I'm going to say yes because I'm all about living in the moment. Boom. You're like doing what you said
you're
going to do.
I wrote this down. You're a solver, right? I mean, you're like, I feel like especially hyper creative people are like, anything that is in front of them, they want to figure it out and like make it better, right?
Right.
You're just like, oh, I need to figure that. Oh, you have something you need? Let me make it good.
Right.
Yeah. It's like dangerous. You need a buffer between
big
you and
time.
Like a...
Big time.
Well, as two people who have explored both kind of broader investigations of what you want to do and have flowed back down the channel of having a niche, I would kind of want to pick your brains about what you thought the pros and cons of each were.
Mm.
If you think there are like, I mean, we're kind of a pro niche conversation right now. We're kind of erring on the side of niches
That's
are
true.
Good. It's doing what we love. We're doing it with a purpose inbuilt. But if you guys maybe want to like talk about just for a second, kind of what the different forces acting on you in each of those life stages is.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the danger of niche is...
Thank you.
The danger of niche is that you invite stagnation. Not by default, but I think a lot of people do. They niche out in terms of career and go down the path and climb up the ladder and
get comfortable, and get into groove. No, but kidding. The groove becomes a rut, and then suddenly, you know, you've got one thing that you can do and you haven't really grown. Now, that's not a blueprint for how it happens, and it's not necessarily even a negative outcome, but it is a potentiality.
It's what you get from that, and this is not pro or con, but what you get from that is you get stability. You get focus, you get kind of consistency and expected, you know, you can...
If you take it to an extreme, you get like a level of mastery over something that can be very deeply rewarding. If you think of like a person that literally devotes their life to a very specific craft.
True,
you
know, but that's here's, like what I, different... here's what I would say. Here's what I would say. I would say like 98% of people stagnate or they just follow a groove. They don't actually pursue mastery. I think pursuing mastery...
I don't disagree.
Here's what I think. I think pursuing mastery requires what the pro I was going to talk about of not niching, which is you bounce back and forth. You learn so much every time because the first 25 hours of anything, you learn so much.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's like super valuable. And then you bring a lot... Oftentimes you bring that learning back and you just... They just compound and compound and compound. Of course, you need to like then focus that into one thing and it needs to be compatible. But I think that sort of mentality and that sort of learning ability, a true master can focus on one thing, but can learn that much every time. I think most people, though, they focus on one thing, maybe, you know, focus in quotation marks there, and they just learn the first, you know, 40 hours of it, and then they just repeat those. Whereas I think a master learns something, I mean, oh my God, I said this unbelievable guy named Ryan Bush, who was in the studio with Garcia. Do you know Garcia? Adam Garcia?
No.
You should look up his work. You were taking that photo out there. Yeah. The pressure is good for you. Did you see that? That's his work. He's from Minneapolis. But and we did a podcast with him. And,
episode 5.
Yeah, crazy. And I visited with those guys. I met with him when I was out in Portland. And Ryan Bush, filmmaker there, so good. But he did this this short. It's like a 10, 12-minute short on like an American bonsai. A bonsai, I think it's pronounced. Guy, you know, he's the tree. That And it's like, unfucking believable. It's so beautiful. But those guys are learning something new every single time they're working on it because they're open to it. Right. So I feel like maybe you can niche out, but you have to be open to all of the other influences, even though your focus is on the one thing. You're taking in all the stuff, but you're channeling it in one way.
Right. You should have a focus, but not blinders.
Yeah.
Is essentially what you're saying.
When I think anything, any interesting niche is going to have all these like little crevices that you can dig into, or like your material or subject matter, if you let that inform how you treat each project, you know, you'll continue to grow and learn there. And I think one thing that is really valuable about not having a niche, kind of what you were saying, is that whatever you learn in one spot bounces back to another thing and they just keep like ping-ponging. Like whatever you're learning helps each project. And I think you might miss out on some really cool things you're good at or you really like if you say no. Mm. So I think it's, again, about parameters. Like maybe there's 5 projects a year I take on that I have no idea what I'm doing and I carved out time to do those and learn it well, and I'm not depending on those things to survive.
Yeah.
Because I agree. I think what can happen too is you'll get super bored and then you might diverge into something out of boredom, and then that was a huge mistake. So it's like you have to tell yourself, I'm going to say yes. And then it's like a decision instead of saying, whatever comes to me, I'll just say yes. Like you're still in control, because I think that's really important as a creative too, is to not let people who commission and hire you rule your life and tell you what you're going to do every day. Like you need to say, I'm telling you what I'm going to do, and I'll decide if this is a good project for us to work on or not. I think that just really helps kind of your confidence when you go into the project that you chose it and it didn't choose you.
Yeah, one way that helps me looking at that stuff too is I used to just get bulldozed all the time by people and clients because you want to say yes, you want to do good work. But I feel like when I started thinking about it as like very selfish, that's a very selfish act to not teach them how to work with you.
Yeah,
and
that's
true. And to say yes when it isn't a good fit, that's incredibly selfish.
Yeah, you're right. I hadn't thought of it like that.
So it's like that. I like reverse guilting yourself is like, okay, wait, no, I have the responsibility to work with you well, you know? If I want to be a good creative, I need to tell you no, or I need to like tell you what I need.
Yeah.
That's a lot of it, especially creative work, working with clients is just being like, oh, this is what I need.
Right.
Here's what I think. Here's what I need. Here's what I think. Here's what I need.
And then it's surprising when you say what you need to do the project, how they want it done.
Uh-huh.
Their response, like I used to be like, okay, whatever you want. Oh, you're unhappy. Let me fix it. And then now I'm like, well, you're unhappy because, you know, you worked outside of the parameters I set up. So if you work in my parameters, we'll get it done right.
Both be happy.
Yeah. Right? And I, for the very first time, said that to somebody and her response was, okay. Yeah. And like we just kept moving forward and we got like a great resolution on the project. Yeah. And it was the first time I really like, I don't want to say like stood up for myself, but you're kind of like, hey, that, you know, I'm in charge and we got to do it my way. Not because I want to be like in control over you, but I got to be in control of this project and do it justice and not be selfish. And
you think being in control is what's best for the project.
And yeah, so exactly.
You're assuming control, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the confidence that comes with understanding that you do own a niche.
Yeah.
And then you are the expert and that you can, if nothing else, rely on that expertise. The client will follow you, hopefully.
I'm kind of curious to hear like an agency perspective on this. Like, do you guys feel like you have a focus in terms of clients or in terms of projects or in terms of...
Yeah, of course. And just like the clients we serve, we suffer from the same problems that they do, right? Yamamoto certainly, I think we certainly do have a specialty and we have both niches and expertise and in the type of business that we target, but we also sometimes have identity crises and we don't always understand exactly the niche that we're going after.
Yeah.
Or we stretch too far, or we overextend on a project that we don't have a realistic chance of winning, but then sometimes we do win those projects. So, you know, it's a difficult balancing act because first of all, you have a company that has a specific mindset, and then it's made up of a bunch of people who have their own niches. And so balancing your capabilities and your talent versus how you want to grow and what you want to do and the added complicated dynamic of existing within an MDC family of agencies expects us to have a niche in compared to anything else. I think if I were to describe it, we are a branding first agency. We know how to build brands and identities for people. And even though we don't have as much technical capabilities of actually producing work, I think if you're looking for a way to talk about yourself, we're a good place to go. We have more specific kind of focuses and expertises, but that's not necessarily interesting. I think what's more interesting than anything else, I mean, every agency has their specialties and their client portfolio.
Send me your capabilities deck.
Exactly. I think what's more interesting is the way that we want to grow and being a part of growing as an agency that way and targeting
culture of it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Bigger and bigger companies, but companies that are at their core, like creative brands. And so finding creativity in our client partners, that's something that's cool. And I think, I mean, agencies probably have even more trouble doing it than you guys do as independently employed
people. That's what I was going
to say. Just saying no to business, right? Yeah. When we've got like parent companies to please and we've got bottom lines to look out for and people's livelihoods on the line, like,
and a whole bunch of motivations.
Okay, yeah.
Inside of one building.
Of various battling motivations. Well,
and especially, I feel like even in agencies and in the creative industry, even more so, like a bunch of pretty independent people coming together under one banner. I mean, like the turnover / like the jump around rate. Can we call it that, the jump around rate?
The jump around rate is
factual. Is that
absolutely through the roof? I'm sure it's true in other advertising markets, but in Minneapolis especially, a couple of years and you're moving on. You're jumping around, and that's just expected. And, it's interesting. It keeps everyone on their toes.
Restlessness, though, right? I mean, that's
exactly.
That's what we're talking about when we're talking about niche.
And I think agencies, definitely more than people by their nature, are restless and willing to stretch the niche for sometimes their benefit and a lot of times their detriment.
Mm. Well, and so they're stretching their niche because of funds.
Because they need or want to.
Right. And Grant, do you feel like you stretch yours because you want to personally grow as an artist?
I think more so in the last I want to say the last year especially, it's been like artist focused.
Yeah.
And because, well, I mean, the whole time it's been, well, it's been investing in myself is so much more important than money. Like money is like, if you like, just like realistically, the multiplier effect, you know, it's going to go up and up and up, right? I mean, generally, it's just going to get better. So if you can stay afloat and find ways to just keep moving and making stuff you're interested in working, it's just like that stuff is way more important. So I feel like the bottom line, that's why I think I stepped away from the like building an agency thing right away, because like that's not very valuable right away for me, at least, because I can't demand that high of rates and like trying to manage this stuff, I'm not going to grow as much. So it's just stupid really to like, I mean, it's just irresponsible. Yeah. Even if I'm just trying to grow as an artist, even if I want to build an agency, I shouldn't do it right here because I should get better at this and I should build these relationships and these things, because those things are all going to pay off more. Right. It's just like poor investment to try and do that right away.
Yeah.
At least for me at that time.
So then I feel like one of your like tests you give yourself, if you're going to stray from a niche, if you define one, is this to grow as an artist or is it because I want the money? And then maybe if it's I want the money, then that's where you're like, nope, that's where I'm not going to.
Well, yeah, it's like, that. I mean, every single time it's this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm drawing circles on paper. I just mean it's Venn diagram. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like it's, and I think you probably and I probably and generally just get better at like very quickly understanding whether what circles it fits in, the project and the client and the relationship and the whatever. And you just see all of the, you see all of the benefits and you can. I think you're probably really good at this point. I know you always say yes, but like you can tell. I mean, you know if it's a good thing or not. I
right,
mean,
exactly.
Pretty quickly. There's so, I mean, we had an episode that I come back to a lot called Red Flags.
And oh, yeah.
They're also green flags. There are green flags, but there are there are red flags. Which, I mean, as a yes person, it's all green flag or it's all yes. So it's really more about identifying landmines.
Sure.
You know, it's like that. But, yeah, so I think I wanted money to be less of a thing, which is why I scaled back, because that added more pressure that took away from the other sides of things that are doing better, you know, and I'm happier and I'm doing better work because I'm happier. So
yeah.
I have a couple quick questions for both of you guys.
And this is a little segment we do every episode.
Oh, wait, not
rapid fire cues. No, oh, I'm just kidding. Okay.
I was like, wait, no. But... Two questions. Do you guys think you found your niche, and how did you find it? If so.
Ooh. I think I'm trying to explore the idea of being specific and having a niche and seeing if it works better. See if it like helps manage stress.
Yeah.
See if it creates more clarity for my brand. I think, you know, what can be really challenging is if you do want to have like a lot of things you concentrate on, do you have to have a bunch of different business names so that each brand can be strong so people get what Grant's you do?
Throwing up his hands.
But I mean, that's better than having one umbrella and like people being confused about what you do. And so I think I'm really interested in having a niche. Like, I'm craving that. Like, I don't want to be all over
it's
the
nice,
place.
It's nice, right?
I mean, great
answer.
Yeah.
It sounds just comfortable. And it's like, and comfortable in a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah. Like,
comfort is not a bad word. Sometimes we tend to vilify it a little bit on the show. Yeah. But comfort is definitely not a dirty word.
Like, I want comfortable shoes to go run a marathon. Like, I'm not saying, like, I want to be comfy and sit on the couch. But
that is
like
such good. That is so good.
I'm just going to grab a high five from you.
We are going to repeat that. I swear to you, we're going to repeat
that. No, but, and also, we're, like, coming around. And I'm actually, like, coming back around to, for me, like, I am more focused on filmmaking. And I have been more and more focused on that and, like, excited about it. And the other stuff has been, it's, like, a thing. Like, I think of design, something I'll always do. And I'm, like, super into it. But it's, like, more and more, I'd rather do that on other terms. And, like, you know? And so, I'm right there with you. I'm not vilifying the idea of comfort. It's about getting into the... And we're talking about the mastery level here. We're talking about, like, oh, wait, I'm really good at this, and I want to kick some ass at this.
Right.
And, frankly, if you're doing that, like... these are not real numbers, but let's say like if you, instead of trying to like overextend yourself over the course of 12 hours every day, you know, and like just like burning yourself out trying to, you know, do this and this and this and this, you could honestly put in like 4 focused hours every day and pay all your bills and do whatever you need to do. And then you can start to act actually really take that other time and do the stuff you're interested in.
Right.
You know, like, it, frankly, if I just wanted to do design stuff, I could probably knock out 3 hours every day and just do music video shit and all this other stuff on the side.
right. Yeah, no. Absolutely.
I don't know. But like, at the same time, I would rather, longer term, just be making films.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and then outside of that, maybe doing some fun things. Yeah. It's just like...
Well, and I think what gets really confusing when your work, you're really passionate about it and you've kind of found your groove, like, yeah, I can do this. I can do anything. You maybe overextend when some of those things should be like hobbies, but you just classify everything as work.
Yeah.
And even like when I help friends or like help on, you know, kind of like a passion project where you're doing it for free, I've started to try to be like, all right, you're not working. Like, you're doing something you enjoy. So then you don't have to feel frustrated or you resent people. Yeah. But it's like, that's your free time thing. That's not your like... your work time thing.
You can be professional within the bounds of what you're doing.
Yeah.
But not, you don't have to like over professionalize it. Right.
Or like I get the danger of like, oh, I can make anything a business. Like people are like, oh, I love the way you decorate. Oh, okay.
Interior I'm a decorator.
Designer. Here we go. Who wants it? You know, I started going, should I add this page to my site? Like I'll come in and help you style your studio. And then I was like, whoa. Okay. Like stop trying to make
Breaks.
Everything a business.
Breaks. Yep.
Yeah.
Oof. Totally.
Well said.
Ooh.
Guys, we're talking about niches. We're talking about going into our passions, our interests, and carving out what some people might say is a slice of that. And making that something we really focus on. Something else that we all love comes in slices. I'm working on a segue here, Grant. But you're giving me a complete blank face. All right,
is that what you're building up to?
Yeah, so
dude, I see when you're about to segue, you get one of, your like face kind of like relaxes and tenses at the same time. It's really odd.
I get in the zone.
Your eyes kind of drift upward to the skies. It's like you're channeling some greater power because your segues are truly divine.
Oh, Grant, that's maybe the nicest thing you ever said about me, which says a lot about our relationship. But no, I'm kidding. You're very complimentary. But every week we like to take a little break from the conversation and do a segment we call the off-topic topic. Where we talk about something completely random and different. And this week, we're talking about pizza.
Yes!
So that's a good sign. Do you like pizza?
I love pizza.
That is a great answer.
I love pizza. My husband is obsessed with pizza.
Oh, yeah.
He'll always say, why do I like pizza so much?
I met him a couple times in the elevator, right?
Yeah.
Why does he like pizza so much? Does he know?
I don't know. He hasn't figured it out. He wants to know why he loves it. I like your drawing there.
Thank
you.
I'm just drawing a little pizza.
Grant is always the absolute most studious note taker, and it always benefits us. This time I'm looking at what looks like pepperoni.
I found in general, like having a notebook somewhere, it was a way to like, at a deeper level, just calm my nerves, but mostly just like focus me. Like if I'm drawing something, I would like just honestly over and over just draw like little pyramids and stuff, and then I could like listen to what the person
totally.
Saying.
It's like you have extra energy, and it's like instead of being
just
like
channeling it, instead of just like sitting around. And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. For sure. What's your favorite type of pizza?
Ooh, good question. You know what?
We're like really in sync right now.
I have a few favorite types.
Ooh, okay.
Hit me. All right. So we've got punch pizza. That's cool, delish.
A local favorite. Yes.
Wood fire.
So good.
Delicious. Big fan.
They have this one pizza there that if you order it to go, it's just a crust and then like a bowl of mozzarella and like tomatoes and basil and you just dump it on top.
Have had it. Yum. Is phenomenal. Yes.
I don't know what it's called. Do you know what it's
called? No, I don't remember.
The Vesuvius. To
go. All of their names are a little fancy. I can't remember them.
I don't know. They're a little snobby. But the pizza's really good.
Delish.
Oh, so
And it's
good.
Done in 90 seconds, my favorite part.
That's pretty cool.
I also love like a good stuffed crust Pizza Hut pizza.
Yeah.
Oh, a throwback. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's
But
a,
you know what is really pleasure. Tricky?
Yeah.
Around here in downtown East. We're not close enough to a Pizza Hut.
You are.
That delivery is ick.
What do you mean?
It's just like cold.
Oh, because it's bleh. Because it comes so far.
It comes from uptown.
It doesn't even say. Yeah, yeah. I remember this because it's like it doesn't even say it's like within the range. But then if you called,
sometimes you'll do it.
You do like pizza.
I see you. Okay. Yeah. We're cool.
What's your guys' favorite kind of pizza?
Ooh, it's a tough one. I think I got to give a shout out to another local brand, Pizza Luce. Love their stuff.
Oh yeah, that's good.
I mean, dude.
Yeah, we're both
classic. I mean, we've gone to Luce.
We've had many a meeting over Luce.
Yeah, yeah. Wrangler pineapple.
Wrangler add pineapple. That's the dream.
You like Luce better than Black Sheep?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, but I do love Black Sheep.
Oh, Black Sheep's cool. It's just
the artichokes on the pizza are very good.
Luce just has a little more flavor for me, a little more substance.
Okay.
Yeah, but I respect more the kind of personality. Like
kind of wood fired stuff. Yep. You know, it's, or coal,
tastes like a tortilla.
Excuse me, coal fired.
Coal fired. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
big fan of that.
Have you had Galactic? I haven't. Just to clarify.
No, I haven't either. But I've heard good things. Actually,
yeah, me either.
From out of state, but soon to be in the city.
Ooh.
Is deep Chicago style pizza.
Oh.
Yes, Giordano's.
Now hold on. There's a new place. My lady friend is like that. She went to school in Fort Collins.
Oh really?
And this was like a late night, like the best. Hold on, I gotta.
We're about to get an update in real time, guys.
Sorry.
But I do love
Fort Collins.
In Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But so there was like there's a place that she like was got like a little too excited that it was like coming here. Kind of freaks me out.
Yeah, you gotta keep that under wraps. But
I had too many texts here.
It's like, so popular.
It's like, no, I mean between us.
It's like, yeah, you're never gonna find that.
Just go a little bit.
There's no.
Just
no,
like search at the top of like the main search.
No, there's a search function. So, oh yeah, DP Dough.
DP Dough. I've never heard of this in my life.
Fun.
So like, it's moving here.
Some pictures from.
Oh, love.
Sorry. This is the perfect execution of the audio medium.
The perfect for the radio, for the podcast, is showing pictures to the guests. Sorry.
But as someone who's been to Chicago a lot of times, I'm a big fan of the traditional deep dish style pizza there.
Sorry, we went to another place that was like this weird little... Man, we went there... Oh, dude, do you know Katie Ryan? Queen Kathleen-y?
No.
Oh, you should. You should look her up.
Okay.
You'd love her stuff. She just does like cool...
Show notes.
I gotta give her a shout out. Like, you would really like her stuff. I bet you would like to work with her too. She's just,
okay.
She's really sweet.
Oh, I wish I had my phone
no,
with me.
No, it's okay.
We'll send you that.
Okay.
It'll be in the show notes.
Send me your notes.
Yep, absolutely.
Queenie Kathleen.
That sounded really beautiful.
Very beautiful. Very beautiful stuff. She has a nice Instagram. But I went there with her. We went on like a double date situation. It's like, I want to say like Nick's.
Oh, yeah. It's like right, like when you're driving by, it's kind of on the corner.
I feel like it's kind of by 5 Watt. Maybe
it's going towards like Minnehaha area.
Yes.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. I've never been there.
It felt like I was in like a kind of a smaller town, and it was like the baseball game just got done, and there was like some families there or something.
Oh,
like,
that's actually
paint that picture.
Lovely. Yeah. It was very homey.
It was
like
awesome.
That.
Like a nice thin crust. We got like a bacon cheeseburger pizza. It was really tight. Yeah.
Cool.
It was nice.
Nice. One more quick shout out is to Mesa Pizza.
Mesa, you have to. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't
very
had
creative
that.
And interesting pizzas.
Going to college in the Twin Cities, there were many a drunken night. Like,
absolutely.
I'm just saying, like 2 a.m.
Is that on the U campus?
Oh, yeah.
And you can buy it by the slice?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I've
had
that.
Yep. Philly cheesesteak's my favorite. Also, mac and cheese.
I love the mac and cheese. I mean, the buffalo chicken's been coming to more popular area.
Baked potato, very good. All right. Well, all that said, I have a question for you guys. What don't you like on your pizza? What can you not tolerate on your
chicken.
Pizza?
Chicken.
Really? Oh, no.
Chicken
I love
and
chicken
pizzas
so
don't
much.
Intersect.
I cannot get on board with that. You've been a great guest so far, but
no,
chicken
well,
is delicious.
Have you done like a white sauce with that?
It's just like, to me, I was like introduced to chicken on a pizza maybe too late, and it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, no, it's very open-minded of you. Sorry, no, I'm just kidding. It's fine. It's totally cool.
No, I totally get it.
Mine is a
pizza staple, so I can't imagine the ire I'm going to get from you guys or the listeners, but I can't stand olives of any kind on my pizza.
That's cool. I'm right there
do
with
not
you, dog.
Want
no,
olives
I'm
involved.
I'm right there with you, dog.
Do you like olives at all?
No.
I've come around on olives in general, but mostly because of like Italian pasta salad.
All right.
I just mean like olives are kind of not my thing.
You just got like over the pasta salad, so you got over olives?
No, I mean like I'm coming around on them. Like I hate olives.
Oh, got it.
But like just like pickles, I hated pickles for so many years, but I just kept eating them. No,
just to force yourself to like them because they're
real talk, and now I love them.
There
so,
you go.
So I'm saying like my way in on olives has been pasta salad.
Oh,
so
I see. It's your gateway.
So there might
pasta
be
pasta salad's your gateway.
Where do I go from here? Like some sort of
Bloody Marys with olives maybe,
yeah,
and martinis
true.
Might be the next move.
I love Bloodies, which I didn't like before, but I still hate olives, so whatever.
Nice.
I'm trying to think where some other good slices we've had.
I think the best pizza I've ever had in my life. Oh, it was artichoke pizza in New York City is my the favorite.
Cool. I mean, I always get some New York slices when I'm around there. It's pretty cool.
Devani's is good.
Yeah. I mean,
Devani's is good.
Right, they have really good sandwiches.
They totally do. No, you're
best
totally
for
right.
greasy pizza in the city. You can't get a better greasy pizza than Devani's. Yeah, and I say that with love.
I'm going to give a shout out to Cheetah Pizza, like a block or two
away. Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
It's kind of cool. They have slices. It's just like this weird little.
Oh, yeah, no, I know that place.
It's a block or two away?
Two blocks.
Where, on Washington?
No, on 7th Street. Pizza. In that weird North Star Plaza or something?
Yep.
Yeah.
In the North Star
they're only building. You know, those places, like right by that saucy chicken thing or whatever.
It might only be open during business hours.
It's only, yeah, for sure.
How dare they?
Yeah, what?
No, it's.
I mean, I know. I mean, but that's downtown life for you.
Andrea's pizza is not bad. It's in the Skyway, too.
Yeah, that's all right. What's the worst pizza you've ever had?
I don't even want to.
Pizza Ranch. I'll say it.
Dude, I one time.
Pizza buffet chain in Breadbasket America.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. But I once went there. We went there after a shoot. Wait, what's it called? Fear Not. You remember that one?
Yep.
We did this cool. That was a fun video. I'm really proud of that one. Called Fear Not. Yeah. And we had this shoot at a high school in like Andover on like a Sunday, and we got done and we're like, oh, let's go grab a bite. And we're like looking on the map and it's like, oh, the only thing around is Pizza Ranch. And we went to Pizza Ranch, but here was where it got weird. One of the dudes who was working on it, super talented guy named Josh Becker, was like on a pretty weird diet. I forget what it was. It was like Atkins meets the Pacific Rim meets the like
Pacific
meets
Rim.
The four,
the answer to
four
South
corners
Beach, yeah. Pacific Rim.
Yeah,
the San Andreas Fault diet.
Yeah, it's like an earthquake inspired. It's got like it's like a lava element. It's Guillermo del Toro. Guillermo. Who am I thinking of?
Yeah, Guillermo
del Toro.
Toro.
Guillermo.
That's
del
tough
Toro.
To say.
There we go. It's kind of like Gonzalez. It's a tough name.
It's really tough. Those
it's like
Z's
tough.
Trip you
but he was on some weird like no sugar or something diet, and he like pulled. It was a buffet, and he got like 8 pieces of pizza, and then pulled all the meat and cheese off, and then just ate the meat and cheese.
Oh, got it.
And then just like, I get it, no carbs, but like we looked like fucking idiots. Like the waitress came over, and it's just like. Just like 2 full pizzas of crust with nothing on it, and we're just like,
this guy. Oh my god!
Good times.
I mean, it's a balance to strike between abusing a buffet and, you know, dietary restrictions.
Oh, it's tough.
You know what else is tough? Having to wrap it up an episode.
Oh, it's the worst.
Hey, that's a great segue though. Silver lining.
God, we gotta just stop. Okay, we should like. Disallow the word segue from our show.
I think
we get so
the amount of words I say on the show would go down by half if we could say segue.
Pretty close.
I'm very self-congratulating with my segues. But
hey, I just did a segue.
Hey, there it is. Yeah. So we like to wrap our show in the same way every week, and that is by asking our gracious guest 2 questions. And so if you would be so kind as to answer them in order, they are... How can our listeners support you? And
nice question.
If you would like our listeners to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would you want that to be?
Oh, wow. I feel like those are easy, but suddenly they seem complicated. So the first question is...
How can they support you?
How can they support? You know what? I think tell other people about Mei Mei & Co. If... you know, we can work together. I'd love to work with you. If not, pass us on. Tell someone else about us. You can find us at meimeico.com. Mm-hmm. Meimei spelled M-A-E-M-A-E. Or you can look us up on Instagram.
I feel
that's kind of my happy spot.
You're a pretty good... I'm just saying, like, it's really exciting to me when I find people. I'm like, oh, like... They get it. Like, we're speaking the same language.
Yes.
Or, like, I at least understand what they're saying. Yeah. It's, like, the visual language, what they're doing, what they're posting. It's just, like, inspiring and exciting. I feel like you guys have a fantastic... Like,
thanks.
You post a lot of really cool stuff.
A good thanks. Gram, yeah. I would say.
Great gram.
Yeah, good gram.
Gram time is my happy time.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then something I'd want them to take away.
Yeah.
I would want them to take away that idea of kind of creating your parameters of what you're going to say yes to. I think that is something that I wish I had learned a lot sooner. And kind of, again, going back to it, like you can say yes to a lot of things, but you're consciously saying yes. Like you're going to say yes to 10 weird projects or non-paying projects, but you set a number And you're kind of checking through those 10 things instead of just letting the demand dictate how you do your life every day.
Well said.
Well said.
Absolutely. Indeed. That's something we talk about, you know, not infrequently on the show, is that being purposeful in your motivations and things you want to accomplish and always keeping it in mind is something that has a ripple effect in everything you do that makes the work more purposeful. And that's something that's just going to yield good results.
Totally. It's something I've been thinking about related to that. Like, in general, even this show, like, we're talking about the work, we're talking about stuff, mm-hmm. and we're trying to, like, define it and explain it, yeah. and, like, talk about strategies and stuff. And I think of the stuff we're making, and maybe it's a more artistic sense now, but it's, like, kind of like music, where it's, like, you don't need to over-explain music, right?
Right.
You hear it, you feel something.
Yeah.
Like, that is your communication.
Yeah.
I think more and more, especially as things are broadening and kind of the lines between work and titles and capabilities and skills are just blurring, I think let your work speak for itself.
Mm, yeah.
And don't get so caught up in explaining what you do and how you do it and all. And I think if you consistently put out stuff that you're proud of and that you actually want to attach your name to, that is going to do it for you.
Yes.
Way better than you, you know, standing on a soapbox and yeah. screaming about it will. And I think that even you are a fantastic example of that, which is like, I look at the work and it's like, I get it. I don't get everything. I don't know sure. all the nuances, but right. it's like, I get it. At least in terms of, this is really good. And like, there's something here. There's another message, you know? I feel like
yeah,
those, if you can do that, yeah, hell yeah. So, yeah, just go make some stuff, which is basically what we say every time.
Go make stuff.
Stop listening to this goddamn podcast and go make some stuff.
We
and
you'll be fine. Not to say self-awareness this time, though. So
no, I was.
You just said it.
I swear. Yeah, thank you. Great. I was so close. I don't remember what part. I was like, don't. Just don't. I was like, I almost wanted to just self-awareness. Like, I think it was something like, it was when we were talking about like, oh, how you're deciding what to work on and like saying no or whatever. It's just like, well, if you're tuned into yourself and you be like, you have some self-awareness, it's like, you don't, it's like, I think it was the instinctual part,
yeah. where,
yes, which is yes. like, you know, you can see very quickly, like the different, circles of influence that yeah. are, you know, that you're deciding really, if you know what you're trying to do, if you know, like, if you know your bank account numbers, if you know this number, if you know like where you're trying to head. Yeah, you're good.
It can become intrinsic.
Yeah, you figure it out.
And we joke about it, but it's true. It's informed by self-awareness, and I think you have a very self-aware stance on where you want your creative endeavor to go. And so
thanks.
Thank you for that, and thank you for joining us in studio for a very fun episode. And thank you in advance for helping us with one final request,
ooh,
which is...
Ooh. Also, I'll let you keep going, but we were on the Jinx game before. I would like to. I feel like this is like a family...
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. We can do it as a
yeah,
team.
Yeah.
All right. Great. We'll do a team. We like to send the show off with our own personal mantra, which is ship it, meaning ooh. You got to get the work done.
If it doesn't ship, it doesn't hurt.
Exactly. Bingo. So we sign off just with a simple ship it, and typically it's on our guests, but today we're going to do it as a team.
In studio, family vibes. We were very in unison before.
Yeah. So we got a lot of double
maybe
ups.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to throw out like a 1, 2, 3, and then we just give it a ship it.
All at once.
Great.
Ready?
Okay.
On four, this is.
Essentially.
Great.
1, 2, 3.
Ship it!